All right, so I want to welcome all of you to this professional development webinar we have as part of an online course that is in the Polar Trek program. Today we are pleased to have teacher and alumni of Polar Trek, Brian Dubay, and he will be talking about bringing his Trans-Antarctic Expedition into the classroom. And he has a lot of really cool tips and things that he wants to share about bringing these polar expeditions or just science into the classroom and how it could be more accessible to you. Before I turn it over to Brian, there's a few things I want you to know about the platform we're using. It's called Blackboard Collaborate, and the slide should have changed. You should see a slide that has a little miniature of our platform with some descriptions about the various features. One of the main ones is when you want to talk later on, which at any after Brian's presentation, we'll have a chance for you all to ask your questions live if you want to. You click on the talk button, which is below the or above the list of participants. You click on that talk button once to open up your mic, and it's very important when you're done talking to click on it again to close your mic, and then we can turn it over to the presenter. If you have a question as we go along, you can click on the little hand icon above the list of participants, and or that lets us know that you have a question. You can also use the chat room, type in the little white box, hit enter, and you can post your question there. And all of these events are archived, and we'll post them online and share them. If you're a part of the online course, we'll share them with you as well. Just a little note about the questions. So again, you can type them in the chat box, and then also at the end, we'll call on you, and you click on that talk button to open up your mic and click on it again to close it. So we will not go around the room and call on all of you and have you introduce yourself. We ask you if you to introduce yourself in the chat box. Just type in who you are and where you're attending from, and if there's anybody else that's with you today, or maybe you're interested in why you want to take this class or hear this presentation, that'd be helpful. So we'll let you do that, and I'll move on to the next slide, which is about Polar Trek. So the reason Brian is here with us is, like I said, he's an alumni of Polar Trek, and this course is part of our Polar Trek program. And it is a program where we put educators such as yourself with researchers in the polar regions so that they can get hands-on, first-class, front row seats to science happening, and it's really exciting. And Brian, well, I'm sure will introduce his researcher and his expedition here in a little bit. And in fact, I think that's the it for my slide. So it is. I'm going to turn this over to Brian, and I'll push your first slide out, and then I'll let you take over there, Brian.
Well, hi everybody. I'm Brian Dubay. I'm over here in Warren, Michigan, and I was working last in November with Dr. Hansen in Antarctica, and we were working on putting seismometers in the Trans-Antarctic mountain range to try and figure out why that mountain range exists where it does. And it was such a great experience, and I'm so lucky that I get to go back next year, and I'm so excited about that. I can't wait for November. Winter just kind of got over here, but I'm waiting to go back. It's been so much fun. But what I'm going to talk about today is how to use this, you know, type of technology, you know, the new types of social media, the new types of technology that exist out there to help engage the students a little bit more and get them more involved in science. Because, you know, that's a huge component of any science teacher, any teacher's job is to engage the students as much as possible. And I found that using the technology the way that I did from Antarctica, it was and just a great experience for the kids because they really identified with it, and they're still talking about it today. So the two things that I kind of wanted to talk about was one being public outreach and how to get not only your students engaged, but the school district engaged, your staff, you know, and the community involved, as well as how I did it. You know, personally, I made a lot of video journals that I think some of you might have watched, and how that has impacted my students. So if you look at the next page here, let's see if it works. Yeah, it works. Okay. One of the things that I tried to do was when I first started teaching, I was always kind of against using the cell phones in the classroom and, you know, engaging the students outside of school in such a way that, you know, kind of would possibly, you know, yield some problems. So, but I found it really easy for me to use Twitter and, you know, Skype and YouTube to help get them on board. Because, you know, when I was trying other things, and I was trying normal journaling or just, you know, speaking about science topics, you know, they get engaged. But, you know, when they actually get to see you do something, you know, you're being the teacher, you're in front of them, and you're, you know, you're out there doing real science, and they're just enthralled with it. And, you know, it makes them really get involved a little bit more. So I utilized YouTube a lot. I Skyped a lot with my students. Twitter was essential. And maybe when I go back next time in November, I'll use things maybe like Instagram or, you know, whatever the new thing is at that time to, you know, keep them engaged. And let's see here. Like on this one, on this slide here, Twitter. I mean, it was so useful because wherever I was, especially in Antarctica, once I got back to McMurdo Base, I could just type about what I had done for the day or what I was accomplishing for that day, and it would go right to the students' phones. And, of course, you know, before, you know, I left, I told them that, you know, I'd be setting up a Twitter account, and it's, you know, school use only, and it's appropriate things, so don't post anything that wasn't, you know, school appropriate. And I didn't have any problems with that, which was nice. And it, because, you know, they want to be on their phones, they want to text and look at things so often that when, you know, I would tweet them, they can't help but to look at their phones to see what it is. And then when they see it's from me, then they're like, they might be excited about it, they might not be excited about it, but I always try to put like a little teaser in front, you know, trying to get them to, you know, figure out what I was doing. So one of the first things that they always would ask is, you know, what's the temperature, what's the weather, what am I doing? So that's kind of like my first couple of tweets. And, you know, from there, it just kind of kept spreading because they started, you know, retweeting what I tweeted. I know that sounds ridiculous, but they kept doing that too. And not only the other kids that, you know, they knew from other schools, but, you know, it was spreading literally to their parents and their grandparents. And I started getting messages from them, people I didn't even know. And it really spread quite rapidly. And so I love using Twitter, and I'll definitely use it again. But I think I even might start using it in my classroom for, you know, announcements. I know that seems kind of maybe like a little bit too much, but, you know, for, you know, maybe like a new assignment that I was going to post on, you know, my class website or a little, you know, blurb about something to remember for tomorrow. I mean, it's helpful, and I end up getting more responses that way than I would through email because, like I said, they always have their phones on them. They always checking their phones, and they're always checking these accounts like Twitter and, you know, Tumblr. So, you know, maybe, you know, you would get a couple more kids engaged than you possibly would, you know, otherwise. One of the other things that I worked on, let's see if this works. There we go. All right. Was Skype. And you would think that being in Antarctica, the connection wouldn't be that great, but it was surprisingly, you know, fast. And so I was literally able to Skype in pretty much real time without much of a delay. But as you can see in this picture, I mean, my students just lost it. Every time that I would Skype in, they just lost their minds, and they wanted to hear everything that I had to say. Of course, they're probably just trying to get out of the work that the substitute is trying to give them, but it was also kind of cool. And, you know, a couple times I was able to Skype them from outside, just outside the building, so I was still able to get a good connection. And they love it. They still talk about it. And some students were getting upset because I was, you know, Skyping them in only 1 hour, and then I had to wake up really early in the morning. I had to wake up at, what was it, 2:30 in the morning to Skype my first hour. And it was like a day ahead. It was a nightmare. But I had to. I felt, you know, obligated. And it was really useful. And if I could get to the point to where, you know, maybe next time when I was using Skype a little bit more often and have it a little bit more scheduled, you know, kind of like, okay, you know, when I Skype in this time, we're going to talk about this, you know, kind of have some stuff planned ahead, you know, maybe some, I wouldn't say lessons, but, you know, things that they can use it for, and not just, you know, to see how I'm doing or something like that. And so Yeah, Skype was amazing for that. Let's see this one. When I got the news that I was going to go to Antarctica and be involved with all this with Dr. Hansen, you know, I started talking to my staff, and they at first they're like, yeah, whatever, you know, because it's a staff meeting. They just want to go home. They don't really want to hear what, you know, is going on. But then once I really started getting into it with them and, you know, say, like, well, what if, you know, when I do go down there, if you have any things that you'd want me to engage in that would help your students, you know, we can work on something like that. Like a couple other science teachers wanted me to take weather data. Some history classes wanted me to start working on, you know, the history of McMurdo and what that was about. And so, you know, I got a lot of feedback from that. And that was really beneficial because when I came back to the school, all the teachers that I was working with were just, you know, so happy. Their students were happy, and the school district was happy. And so everything was really, really positive. And now that I am back, I have been going to other schools in the district as well as a couple of the ones around the district because they had heard about it through, you know, the newspaper. And that's kind of what this next slide is, I think. Yeah. I didn't think, you know, a newspaper in today's, you know, time would be that, you know, powerful. But it really was. I mean, once the students saw me in the newspaper, it was like I was a celebrity. And, you know, their parents were, you know, cutting out clippings for me. And I was getting, here's one of the clippings right there. I was getting many of those on a daily basis. And they were just, you know, so excited about it now. And then I was getting emails from parents about, you know, things that, you know, they wanted to learn about, you know, Antarctica and how to use all that. So, I mean, I'm definitely going to do it again. I just remembered that one of the newspaper, what was the name? That's not important. But anyway, she just called me today, and she wants a follow-up interview about how my experience was and, you know, how that affected everything. So I should probably get on that, you know. But, yeah, it was just amazing because, you know, the outreach, I mean, it went from the Warren Weekly, which is, you know, our local newspaper, but, you know, the newspaper journalists, they talked to one another, and so my story went from her newspaper to other local newspapers, and, you know, so I was getting phone calls from them, and ended up being in a small little section of the Detroit News, which is their big newspaper. It, you know, it wasn't, you know, this much a page, but it was still, you know, I got to a wider audience than I thought I actually would, and, you know, that's more amazing than I was expecting. Okay, so the video journals. You know, why did I do the video journals and not the written journals? Well, when I started, you know, using the Polar Trek website, and, you know, I started writing in, you know, journals, just literally journaling, you know, putting a couple of pictures in there, I didn't seem to get much of a response. I wasn't getting a response from my students or the staff or anything like that. And I asked them when I got back, you know, why were they not looking at those? Why did they focus so much on my videos? And they said, you know, they don't want to read. And I know that's terrible, but that's what their response was. So I realized, you know, quite early, thankfully, because of the comments that I saw on the Polar Trek website as well as, you know, the YouTube website, they wanted to see me actually engaging something. Yeah, me in a picture is one thing, but me actually doing something they thought was more amazing. So I was like, okay, fine, you know, I'll switch. We'll do nothing but videos. So I kind of had to learn how to make these videos kind of on the fly. So I had some mistakes in the beginning and some problems, but, you know, by the end I was getting pretty good at it, and I've still been practicing since. So that's been pretty funny. Like, if you look at the screen there, you see this little, like, abominable snowman down at the bottom, because on one of our sites, we had this blue ice site, and there was these little snow pockets that we didn't realize were snow coverings of huge crevasses. And, you know, one of our teammates accidentally stepped in one of them, and he went all the way up to his hip. And when I made the video and I posted it up on YouTube, for some reason the video paused just at that point when I said, uh-oh, something went wrong. You know, one of our, you know, teammates fell in. So for like 2 days, the video didn't work quite right for some reason. So there was like this big cliffhanger about, you know, what happened? Are they okay? And that was unintentional, but it was really successful because then I started to say, you know, look at the size of some of these crevasses that we just missed on landing, and then I put this little yeti in it, you know, pretending like it was a, you know, an abominable snowman cave, and they love that kind of stuff, you know, just the little things, you know, that so they're feeling like they're understanding a little bit more about science, you know, because just before this point, I had talked a little bit in the video about, you know, hoarfrost and, you know, what, you know, these crevasses were, so I thought that injecting a little bit of humor into it would keep them more engaged a little bit longer, you know, so I'd have their attention a little bit longer, you know, because children's attention spans aren't the longest. So I found that, you know, keeping the video kind of short, maybe to like, you know, 8 minutes, you know, 10 minutes maybe if you could string them along with some humor really, really helped. So, I mean, that's a big suggestion for you guys is, you know, if you're ever going to make a little video or, you know, tape one of your lectures, you know, add humor in there as much as possible, you know, because it'll help. It'll keep you engaged a little bit longer. So the students' responses, like I said, you know, were really important because I was able to understand what they liked and what they didn't like, what I should change, what I shouldn't. And like I said, I wasn't just getting it from my students. I was getting it from past students at my other schools that I'd been to. But they were really starting to follow me, not just because they felt like they had to because I was a teacher, because they wanted to. They wanted to hear what I was going to do next and, you know, what the next day was going to bring. And I read that in their comments, and some of the comments I was getting were, you know, were not even from this country. I was getting some from, you know, overseas, so I was able to respond to that too. And, you know, it is kind of a little bit of work, you know, to kind of keep up with all that stuff and remembering to check it, but it really paid off. Like when I got back, I mean, this picture right here is, you know, all my main students that I have, and they were just so happy, and they wanted me to put them in this because they knew that a lot of people might actually see, you know, this Polar Trek event, and so they wanted to know their pictures involved. So they really feel like they're a part of it, even though they weren't, you know, obviously out there with me, but they felt like a true connection to what we were talking about. And they, over the course of, you know, I've been at this school for, you know, not even a full year yet, but I really feel a connection with these students because of what, you know, took place down there in Antarctica. And I think that's kind of amazing too. So, you know, they're going to tell their kids, and, you know, so maybe if I'm there next year, and remember that I'm not necessarily teaching them science right now, I'm teaching them social studies, so some of the things, you know, they really don't really want to learn about, but they'll get, why we learn about this now when we should learn it in science class, but it wasn't that way. They didn't care if it was social studies class or English class, they just wanted to be a part of it. On this page...
Hey, Brian?
Yeah, and tips, Brian, on how to make the video fix that. Be humorous, try to keep it as light as you can, you know, sneak the content in, you know, put a little blurb up in the corner, you know, like, you know, a definition or a science fact, and that's definitely one of the things I'm going to focus on next time is, you know, adding more of that aspect to it, because I found, you know, by looking at YouTube, how many people have actually seen these videos, and, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, if they're actually taking the time to watch the video, that they should be getting more out of it than necessarily what I did the first time, so I'm going to add a lot of that. The music, I thought would be a good idea to add because it kind of keeps it light. And, I was going through my iTunes library trying to find songs that did not have too many lyrics to kind of lead them away from, you know, focusing on what I wanted to focus on. So I just kept using, you know, music like, you know, dance music and dubstep, you know. And it worked. I mean, they loved it, and they couldn't believe that I listened to that type of music in the first place. Well, you know, that was kind of a fun thing. One of my last points there is, you know, finishing the video with discussion topics, and I did that with one of the videos, which ended up getting the most response, you know, when I was talking about the penguins. But, yeah, I definitely think that if you're ever going to do something like that, like, you know, taping your lectures or, you know, taping something like that for your students, you know, make sure that, of course, you have, you know, some preliminary questions about things you're going to cover, but also, you know, wrap it up, you know, like, you know, okay, this is what you should have gotten out of this. And, yeah, I think that is going to be a big component of what I do next time. And I used iMovie, and I don't know if there's another better program out there, but it was pretty easy to use. Like I said, I didn't have any real formal training on it, but, you know, just playing around with it for a couple hours, I was able to figure out how to make a pretty decent movie that I thought. So I was kind of happy with that. And my first video was kind of disappointing because, you know, I synced it up to the music and everything was working really great, and then at the very, very end, I spelled something wrong, and I read it so many times in my brain, I spelled it correctly, but obviously I didn't, and I even showed it to somebody on the team, and they didn't catch it either. So I guess my big suggestion here is, like, you know, if you are going to make a video, just have as many people as you can check it before you post it, because, I mean, it is kind of embarrassing that, you know, oh, my God, you know, I spelled some easy word incorrectly. You got to remember that, you know, it's always out there. I mean, that misspelling, you know, that video is out there, and it, you know, doesn't make me look, you know, that good. So I was kind of disappointed with that. But like I said, you know, once I got back, very, very excited. I had mentioned before I left that, you know, I never, in my classroom, I was never the class teacher that got, you know, this accomplished or was able to, you know, be the best at, you know, this. And, you know, I just kind of left it at that. I didn't really have a point to it. But I found out, like, when I was down there, that the kids were so excited for me and they wanted to show how happy they were that I was doing this and doing this with them, is that, you know, that we had this big canned food drive. And as you can see by the totals there, that in my class, they just huge amounts compared to the other class. I mean, I think there was a 1,300 or something like that cans, you know, compared to some of the other classes. And, you know, it's a good thing for me. It makes me feel good. It makes me feel like, you know, I was doing something good. But also, you know, it was good for the community because, you know, obviously, you know, this canned food drives, you know, help out the people who need it in the community. So, you know, it showed kind of a, like a mutual respect. Like, you know, they were proud of me and I was proud of them, kind of thing. And this is just amazing. At that same Blue Ice site, I saw this cool mountain in the distance, and I was looking on the charts, and it didn't have a name, and I was like, oh, cool, you know, I'm going to claim this as, you know, Monkey Bay. So I put it in one of my videos like that, and my students thought I was really going to do it. And so before I got back, they were all getting together and writing, you know, this big, long letter to whoever I was going to submit this paperwork to try and get me to literally have this mountain. So when I got back in, you know, they're saying, you know, we know you're trying to claim this mountain, so, you know, we wrote you this big letter so you can, you know, submit it to, you know, the USGS and maybe they'll take you more seriously. Now, I was just aghast. I couldn't believe that they would take the time, you know, to do something like that for me. And so I submitted the paperwork, you know, I submitted the letter, and they got back to me 2 weeks ago, and they said, it looks really good, and, you know, everything that I submitted was right. So, I might literally have a mountain in Antarctica named after me. And just unbelievable. So really excited about that. So, you know, was everything worth it? Of course it was. It was such a success to me because they always keep bringing it up. And like I said, you know, I'm teaching them history most of the time, so it doesn't matter what hour it is, you know. They're always bringing about something like, you know, oh, do you remember when you did this, or do you remember that, or do you remember how cold it was that day? And I'm like, yeah, I remember. And so I ask them questions every once in a while, like, do you remember, you know, what side of Antarctica McMurdo was on? And, you know, I get so many hands raised for that type of question compared to the normal things that I would talk about, because I think the videos, I think, you know, the comments, the Skyping, it really helped them feel that they were a part of it. And, you know, obviously that's one of Polar Trek's big goals. And so, I mean, I think for any good teacher, you know, that's going to be your goal, is to try to engage them as much as possible. And this really did it. And so, you know, as being, you know, a teacher and, you know, professional development as that goes, I mean, the Polar Trek program has really done it. It's really shown me, and it's shown my students, shown my, you know, community how using all this type of technology, you know, can really benefits, you know, everybody. It can benefit the students and, you know, make them learn a bit more. And even Dr. Hansen, you know, she was mentioning how, you know, she is showing, you know, my videos that I made to some of her students, and she's kind of getting the same responses. And I looked just a couple of days ago at, you know, how many people had looked at these videos and where they were looking at it from. And, you know, some things were, like, crazy far away, you know, like Sweden, Russia, like a couple from Tokyo, and I couldn't believe it. So, I mean, utilizing this type of technology is good. It can also be a little bit scary, a little bit things, you know, kind of keep in mind, but all in all, very, very successful, and I would definitely recommend, you know, not only PolarCheck, but, you know, just the idea of trying to utilize as much as what they're into your class. Because if they're already engaged in something and you take that and you're able to bring more content to them through the media that they're using, they don't even feel like they're learning. They just feel like, you know, you're talking to them. And so it's kind of tricky, but, you know, as teachers, we got to do whatever we can to make them remember this stuff, right? So I think it was amazing. So any questions, I guess, now, right? Am I done? I don't know. What do I do? Should I stop talking? I'll stop talking.
Okay, can you hear us? Brian, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, we were cheering for you. Did you hear us cheer? We're so excited about your mountain. Go ahead. I'm going to take off in a moment and Sarah's going to take over. But Brian, while you were talking, we were very excited about Mount Dubay. That is just so cool. And it's got a nice ring to it, I must say, as well. There were some questions that came up in the chat, and then we'll go to anybody that has live questions. But from Lucy, and Lucy may need to clarify this because this was a while ago. She's asked, how were your students responding via email, ? And I actually can't remember at what point this came up, but that was one question. And then Julia wants to know, what kind of simple camera would you use or would you get?
I expect them to email me, but email like doesn't exist to these kids. I mean, the email is like something their parents use. So, I mean, I only got responses by using things like Twitter, and I started a Tumblr too, because, I mean, like I said, that's the media that they use, and they don't take the time to email anybody. I mean, they would rather, you know, of course, send text messages than, you know, send an email. But obviously, you know, that was a little bit tricky, you know, because you know, where I was. But in terms of cameras, I had a nice little waterproof camera that, you know, came in handy. I would definitely recommend, you know, if you're ever going to be out in, you know, that type of environment, to bring something, you know, that's, you know, shockproof and, you know, coldproof and weatherproof. But I did have, you know, some issues with the quality of the pictures that were coming out. And so definitely when I go back next time, I'm going to take my big, you know, digital SLR, you know, for when I am in a good environment to actually use that, when I can get some really nice pictures. But then when I'm really out in the rough in it, like, you know, when it's, you know, negative 80 and you're outside, I would use a little point-and-shoot one. But, yeah, and the same thing, too, with the video. I had a nice little camcorder about, you know, this big. Had a good zoom on it, and that worked pretty flawlessly, so I'll definitely bring that thing back. But, you know, it all depends on what kind of pictures you want to take. If you want really amazing pictures, you're going to need a really amazing camera, you know, something with a big aperture, you know, a big lens on that thing. You know, not necessarily for zoom, just to let enough light in, because especially in Antarctica, everything is so bright that you need that. You need that size of an opening in your camera to be able to kind of dim some of that so it looks how you see it, not necessarily how your camera sees it. And that's kind of cool, too, because I found a lot of my pictures with the little camera didn't look as real as the pictures through that big camera.
Good. Thanks, Brian. And actually what we'll do is go to Justin. He has his hand up. So, Justin, go ahead and use the talk button to speak.
Hey, Brian. I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about the time commitment that it took to, you know, produce all of the your communications online each day, you know, balancing that and working with the researchers. I'm just wondering what kind of total time that took up.
A lot more than I was expecting, because, you know, what I was told with McMurdo Base is it's kind of like you have a cable line for your internet, but you're sharing that one cable line with the 1,000 people that are there. So it took me about 3 hours to make the video, about 8 hours to upload the video. So it took a lot of time. Like when I was working with you know, the team members, you know, we'd work 12-hour days, sometimes 16-hour days. But then, you know, when they would go, you know, go to bed, I would, you know, try and get that next video done. But, I mean, being in a video format, it's way more work than obviously just, you know, a normal journal. But I had more fun making it. They had more fun engaging in it. So I'll definitely do it again. I think a way in which I'll try to, you know, mitigate how much time I'm actually working on it is, you know, maybe kind of set up some intros and, you know, exits to the video prior to me going down there, so I kind of have a, you know, less work to do. But I mean, things change. The schedules changed all the time. You always had to be adapted to that. And new things were happening in McMurdo every day. So once I got word of something cool, it was like, sweet, I got to go down there and take some video of this and talk to this person. But, you know, a lot of work, but it didn't feel like work. I enjoyed every second. I mean, my longest day that I worked was 18 hours, and it felt like an 8-hour day. And I forgot to eat for most of that day, but, I mean, it was amazing. I loved it.
Good. Thanks, Brian. A couple of the questions we have here. It sounds like you connected with a lot of your students on almost a personal level through, like, their own phones and their own Twitter or whatnot. But did you come across any roadblocks or issues with permissions at school for doing this kind of stuff? Or did you come across any other teachers who were like, I don't know how to do any of this, and did you have to teach them? What was that like, helping others through this, or any roadblocks?
Yeah, that was a big problem at my school. I'm one of the younger teachers on staff, so, I mean, they're really reluctant to use any kind of new technology, you know, just because, you know, they're afraid of doing something wrong or, you know, not doing it correctly. So there is a lot of training involved that, you know, that I had to do on showing them how to, you know, make an iMovie, because they were so excited about, you know, the movies that I made that they wanted me to show them how to do it. So I had a couple of in-services. I'm showing them how to make a movie, and I asked the teachers and the assistant principal and the principal and even, you know, the director of education for my district if it was okay for me to use this type of stuff, and they were all about it, because I guess one of their big pushes in our district is using technology, you know, to engage the students. So this was, you know, another step for their district saying, you know, look what our teachers are doing. Our teachers are not only, you know, using this technology, but using it, you know, in a way in which it's engaging the students. And so there wasn't really a problem with me using it. They want me to use it more now, which some teachers in the school are kind of a little bit grumpy with me about it, because now they feel like, you know, they have to, and it feels like they have to do more work, and but whatever, they'll get over it, I guess.
All right. Thanks, Brian. I know, it's kind of tough. We all have things to learn from one another, let's say. Lucy did type in a question. Lucy, do you want to ask that question live? If you do, you can press the talk button.
I'm kind of curious about what you say would be the biggest takeaway you gained from the expedition.
That's a tough one. I mean, am I talking anything? Okay. The biggest thing I took away, it was being in a place so remote, but still being so connected. You know, even though the connection speeds weren't that great, I didn't feel like I was, you know, 3,000 miles away from them. You know what I mean? It felt like I was just, you know, I went up north Michigan for a little bit. But then, you know, another side to that fact was, you know, just doing that type of research, you know, actually not just teaching science, but, you know, actually doing the science, you know, helping build the seismometers, placing them, you know, analyzing the data. It makes me feel more part of it, and they feel that for me, you know, not just the students, but the staff, and so they can't help but want to, you know, get on board with me with that, you know, that, you know, they see how passionate I've become about this type of, you know, using this type of technology and how it can really help the class that, you know, it's kind of contagious, I think. They really want to do the same.
Right. Go ahead, Justin.
Hey again, Brian. So I guess I'm just wondering, in no way to suggest that this wasn't the most amazing adventure ever, but was there anything that you felt like you were missing in terms of working with your students actually one-on-one in person during the time that you were gone? And that was there anything that you wish you could have been able to do remotely that you weren't able to do because you weren't back home?
Definitely, because that was I had only been in the school for not even 2 months before I had to, you know, leave to go to, you know, do this. And so I didn't really have quite a good connection with most of the students. I mean, I barely knew their names at that point. But, you know, as I kept, you know, Skyping into them, you know, I started to learn a little bit more about them, getting to learn a bit more about their personality. And I think that would be more beneficial, too, is if I was able to do that for a longer period, I'd be able to, you know, have more feedback with actual individuals, not just the class as a whole, you know, because what they had done, because I knew I had limited time, they would prepare questions, and then the substitute would, you know, kind of look at those questions and, you know, kind of decide which ones to ask and which ones not to ask because of, you know, my limited amount of time. So, yeah, I mean, definitely if I was in the class, it would be more, you know, personable to, you know, each of the students. But I don't really know the way around that there. But, you know, definitely, like, now that the weather's starting to clear up around here, we'll definitely, you know, be able to go outside and do more stuff. And that's a big thing, too. It's just if you can get them, like, out of the classroom and, like, go outside, you know, they go crazy for a second because they're outside. They lose their minds. But, you know, you get them back and then, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, just the simple thing, like, you know, just even just lecturing outside or being outside or just doing something different, going to the library, going to the media center, you know, just whatever. I mean, that kind of stuff helps connect to more of the kids. And I think that would help.
Perfect. Thanks. So let's see. I'll kind of wait a second here and see if anybody has any last questions that they'd like to ask. If you want to type one in or raise your hand there to ask a question, you're welcome to. But it's been really great, Brian, learning about your expedition from your point perspective after the fact of being out in the field. I was typing into the chat box for a second there with Alicia, who is heading out to the Arctic this summer with Polar Trek, and saying that her whole new class of Polar Trek teachers should totally hear this presentation. Teachers do seem to struggle with sort of how do I connect with my students, quote unquote, outside the classroom, which is kind of exactly what you're doing, connecting with them in different ways. So I really appreciate it. It's really, really helpful. They're going to love it. So it looks like people are kind of done with questions. What I'll say at the moment is if teachers are interested in joining Polar Trek, you're welcome to do that in many different ways. You can follow expeditions. You can participate in events like this one or take the entire professional development course that this is a part of and join the Polar Education email list, which you can find on the Polar Trek website. So there's tons of ways to stay involved with Polar Trek teachers and learning more from them. I certainly want to thank Brian so much for this, and then also Dr. Hansen, Dr. Samantha Hansen last week, who was talking about the science of this expedition. So these two webinars are kind of hand in hand. So you can check those out in the archives. And this event will be archived shortly and probably be out to all of you tomorrow or the next day. You can also check out the Polar Trek site for upcoming events. And, yeah, it looks like everybody's saying, thanks, Brian, thanks so much. Your enthusiasm is infectious. And that smile was great to see, so thanks for joining us. It was great. Yeah, have a great afternoon or evening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. Take care.
Bye, Brian.
Thanks.